On the Job with Francis Leach and Sally Rubb.
It's On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. My name's Francis Leach.
My name's Sally Rugg, and my employer doesn't endorse anything I say ever.
And everything I say on this podcast is a consequence of my handlers in the Kremlin.
My employer does endorse some of the things I say sometimes.
They're going through the checklist.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're working in the Kremlin. How are you, Sally?
I'm really good. I mean, to be honest, I'm okay. I got a bit sick last week, actually. I think it was sort of... On the podcast, we spoke about crawling towards the end of the year.
And then
my body was like, crawling, you say? Okay. So I got sort of got a little bit sick, had to spend a couple of days in bed, but I feel good now. How are you, mate?
I'm okay. It's work stress, though, and it manifests in different ways. Like for me, I get the work stress anxiety dream.
Yeah.
It's often from people in previous employment that I've worked in, haven't thought of for a million years, suddenly pop up in your dreams, like a character with a walk-on part in The Love Boat or something, like a cameo guest star. Did I just make an 80s television reference that you don't understand?
Yeah, I wasn't alive then.
Don't say that.
But that's cool, Uncle Francis. So your work stress dreams, are they related to workplaces and people, like former colleagues?
Well, it's a bit weird when someone you used to work with, say, at Triple J, where I used to work a million years ago, not in the 80s though, suddenly turns up in a dream scene where you're, you know, at the football in Munich or somewhere, like completely out of context.
Mm.
And you think, Rosie Beaton, what are you doing here at this Bayern Munich game in my dream? What am I doing here is the first question, but what are you doing here? So that's the sort of weird stuff. And hi, Rosie, if you're listening. It's been a long time since we spoke. Love your work. I'm glad you've made it back into my dreams.
You're still stressing, Francis. Thanks. That's really interesting. So my stress dreams are far more abstract. Like they do need a decoder ring. Like I will know that I am stressed if I wake up in the morning after a dream about that. I have a set of sort of four. You're running late to the airport and you can't find your bags or your passport or whatever.
Classic of the genre.
Yeah. Driving in the car, the brakes don't work.
Yeah, not good one. That's a sort of Hitchcockian one.
Yeah. I'm in year 12 and it's my exams tomorrow and I haven't studied for math.
That's your John Hughes dream, your breakfast club.
They're the sort of three recurring stress dreams. I'm not doing my HSC anymore or my TE because I'm from WA. My car has brakes. I'm certainly not doing any international flying at the moment. So I always have to wake up and sort of do some reflection on, okay, so you've had this stress dream. What are you stressed about? And then sort of think about it from there.
Do you have a dream within a dream, Christopher Nolan style, like Inception style dream?
Oh, I hate those dreams when you wake up and you're like, oh, phew, the nightmare's over. And then you walk out into the kitchen and then, you know, my partner turns around and she's got two heads and you're like, oh, no.
All right, coming up on the pod today, we're going to try to alleviate some stress by interviewing Santa. Now, yes, we are interviewing Santa because being a Santa, it's not all reindeers and milk and beer and cookies when you deliver the presents. It's bloody hard work. And you're part psychologist, you're part family counsellor, you're the keeper of dreams, you're the storer of secrets.
And following our chat with Santa, I actually interviewed one of the elves. And let me tell you, this is an expose into horrific labour conditions. No, I'm just kidding. No, I really loved this chat that we had with Santa. We had it a couple of days ago and it's really stayed with me and I've been thinking a lot about it. So, yeah, I do hope you enjoy this conversation with Santa Ian.
He's going to turn up in your dreams real soon. It's On The Job.
This is On The Job with Francis Leach and Sally Rudd.
It's On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. As we head towards Christmas, Sally, do you ever think about where your fruit and veg comes from and maybe why it's as cheap as it is?
Yeah, I certainly think about where it's coming from, particularly when the fruits that we've missed, well, that I've missed all winter, you know, like cherries and grapes start appearing and you're like, yes, it's summer again, you know, when fruits come into season.
Well, Dan Walton from the Australian Workers Union is part of a campaign to raise awareness about the horticultural agreement that workers are being paid under, which sees some people being paid as little as $3 an hour.
Well, we've been overwhelmed by the feedback since AM ran the story. We've had people reaching out from right across the country to share their experiences. And we've had people pointing out to say, it's not just about the backpackers. It's not just about the overseas workers. We've also been impacted as well. And what they've been telling us is that on average, when they finish their working week, they are taking home less than what the award minimum would be for an average weekly wage. Well, enforcement is a big part of this, and this industry has become the epicenter for exploitation around the country. People know in every corner of Australia that the fruit and veg industry, by and large, is some of the worst exploitation going on. We want to try and fix it. We want this industry to provide decent jobs. But until we start cleaning up, until we start getting some proper enforcement in this industry, unfortunately, the stories will continue playing out right across the nation.
Dan Moulton there from the Australian Workers Union. So this is a big issue, and it's one that's sort of been brought to light solely because of the labour shortage in the COVID period, and a lot of farms which used to depend on seasonal workers, lots of overseas workers, young backpackers and whatnot, haven't got the staff they thought they'd had. And people have been looking at the wage structure in this industry under the Horticultural Award and realising that exploitation is probably the fundamental thing which underpins the industry.
It's been really interesting having sunlight on this particular industry. You know, I heard this package on ABC the other day, like a news package on this issue, and the reporter was like, exploitation is rife in these fruit picking farms. This worker from overseas can't believe he's been treated like this in Australia. Conditions are horrible. It's akin to torture. And no Australian worker wants to work up there, and we think it might be due to laziness. And I was just listening, being like, this is some cognitive dissonance here. And, you know, the story went on to talk about this poor farmer who was forced to bin a bunch of, you know, the farms.
The produce,
the blueberries it was. And I was just left thinking, like, God, this feels like the worst outcome for everybody. Those blueberries would have been delicious, and now they're in the bin. This poor farmer, their business isn't running properly. They're not making it, turning a profit. There's all these people out of work. Like, surely there is a really simple answer here that isn't workers being exploited, either Australian workers or people who come in from overseas. Yeah, feels like there could be quite a simple solution here.
Well, Ben Butler has been writing about this in the Guardian newspaper, and I caught up with him earlier on to talk about this particular issue. And what's at the heart of it? As much as anything, it's our consumer choices, and it's also the big supermarkets who make a lot of money out of cheap fruit and veg. Ben, welcome to On The Job.
Thanks for having me.
Important issue this, and the Horticultural Award is one that's allowed what we call piecework to go on unchecked, where it's sort of being run out of town in a lot of other industries. Can you tell us what it is and how much people are being paid at the moment to pick fruit?
Yeah, that's right. So in most jobs, you get paid an hourly wage or a rolled up wage for the work you do that week. In piecework, you get paid by how much you pick. So in fruit picking, it's basically by the kilo at a rate set by the employer. And as a result of that, effective wages can be incredibly low. According to some research done for the AWU a week or so ago, as little as $3 an hour. So it is rife with exploitation in this industry.
Who's been mostly working in the fields picking our fruit? Has it been overseas workers? Is that why this has gone unchecked?
I think so. It is mostly overseas workers under a few different schemes. A backpacker scheme, one bringing in people from the Pacific, and a sort of general come and pick fruit in Australia kind of scheme. And it's really gone under the radar, I think, because those people have lacked the kind of connections that help people make effective complaints and get their case heard inside the Australian community. So it has really sort of exploded in the last few years. Once upon a time, Australian fruit was picked largely by permanent residents, but over time, the industry has relied more and more on overseas labour, and it now really dominates. And those people, I think, are really vulnerable to being exploited because they're on a visa. Their status here is uncertain by definition. You know, they're really at the mercies of labour hire firms and farmers.
And I guess our cheaper fruit and vegetables in big supermarkets are also underpinned by cheaper labour as well. So as consumers, we've been the beneficiaries of this. And I'd imagine that the producers would tell you that if we were to go to a change to the Horticultural Award, which was to provide a minimum wage, that we'd be paying a hell of a lot more for our bananas and tomatoes and whatnot.
That's very interesting. So previously, That has been exactly what the National Farmers Federation has argued about paying people effectively more to pick fruit. The price of fruit and veg will go up. But when I put this latest move by the union to increase the minimum, to underpin piece work with a minimum hourly wage to them yesterday, they didn't say that. So I'm wondering if they may have been thinking, well, you know, clearly some farmers are blatantly taking the piss and ripping off their workers, and we can't continue to defend that. It'll be really interesting to see how that position evolves as this goes on.
The Australian Workers Union, probably, I think it is the oldest union in Australia, so they know this territory like the back of their hand. This is their domain. Will they have any success in changing this, or will the big companies, Coles and Woolworths, Wesfarmers, these sorts of organisations that rely on the cheap labour that picks our fruit that ends up in our supermarkets, will they push back hard and exercise influence to make sure we continue to accept piecework and $3 an hour as acceptable as long as we get cheap groceries?
Look, the workers here are effectively in the hands of the big supermarkets. So no one really knows where their fruit comes from. You don't know who the individual farmer is, you know. You know, there's some branding, but it's really not influential. What matters is that you buy it from Coles and Woolies. In the last few years, they've copped increasing damage by being held accountable for the abuses that are occurring in their supply chain. And I think the question is, how addicted are they to being able to offer what is kind of almost a loss leader in fruit and vegetables to get people through the door versus how much do they value their good name in the Australian community, which has already been to a certain extent dragged through the mud by their direct association with companies that are participating in the most horrible kinds of exploitation. So we are really, in a way, in the hands of the supermarket duopoly on this.
As consumers, though, do we have some power? Should we be exercising that power in our choices?
Again, the problem is that we can't know. We can't know how our strawberries were picked, how those people were paid. I think it's unfair to expect consumers to try and exercise choice when there is no visible mechanism for them to do so. There's no way we can do that, really. What we can do is say to the supermarkets, we would like you to actually pay people properly in your supply chains. But that's about it, really. We can't do much more than that. It's only really political and community pressure that we can exert. We have no real power here as consumers due to the lack of actual information when we're buying the stuff.
Well, thank you for shining a light on it in The Guardian today, and let's see where it goes from here. Thanks for being on The Job.
No worries.
That's Ben Butler from The Guardian talking about the horticultural war, the poor paying conditions that workers are expected to work under, and the fact that we get our fruit and veg probably below cost because people are picking it and having to curate those fields for bugger all, really. Mm. Maybe we need to be a bit more mindful about where we shop and ask a few questions about who's doing the hard work to put the fruit and veg on our shelves, Sally.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so often with stories like this, whether it is fruit and vegetable, whether it's fast fashion, all the rest of it, it will quite often come back to consumer choices, which personally I feel strongly about, like consumer choices. But I also think that for it to be effective, it has to be done in coordination, right? Like we can't just as individuals be like, well, I'm going to pay a little more for my fruit and vegetables and then not worry about it. And so, yeah, if it's going to be consumer action that we all agree to take forward from here, let's organise it. And if it's not going to be consumer stuff, then let's use our power collectively to lobby the government to put some protections in place.
It's On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. I can hear the reindeers. Santa is coming.
This is On The Job with Frances Leach and Sally Rugg.
G'day, Francis here. Now, finding out accurate info about your rights at work and what wages you should be paid can be difficult. So why not give the Australian Union Support Centre a call? It's completely free and confidential, and the Support Centre is completely independent. Their number is 1300 486 466. 1300 486 466. On the job. It is On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. It's our Christmas edition, and that means there's only one worker right now, Sally Rugg, that matters more than anyone else, and it is Santa.
Santa?
The King of Santas is going to join us in just a moment, because right now, across the world, working as a Santa is crucial work. It's vital work for young people and young kids who invest everything into a Santa experience to make the day magic. And the responsibility falls on a very special cohort of workers who take on the responsibility of making dreams come true. I know you do that in your daily life, Sally, but these people do it at Christmas and they do it in full kit, and their work is very special and very important.
Yeah, it's weirder when I wear the white beard around. Sort of like less sense to that.
Shall we meet Santa Ian?
I'm so excited.
Now, Santa Ian is one of the world's great Santas. He works all over the world as a Santa. He's going to tell us about his extraordinary career. He's based in Adelaide, and he brings Santa joy to kids and adults the world over. And he joins us from his Santa's workshop today. How are you, Santa Ian?
G'day, and Merry Christmas, everybody. This is the workshop in the North Pole, you see.
Where are all the elves?
The elves? Well, yeah. They're on a break. I believe in, you know, everybody works and has a break.
That's right. All good. 10 minutes an hour, go out, have a seat and a drink of water.
They've got a very good EBA to the elves, because Santa's a very good employer. Santa, tell us about your journey to being a Santa. How did you become, Ian, one of the world's great Santas? What was your first Santa job?
Whoa, okay. 2003, my wife saw an advert in the paper for Meijer stores. She said, hey, you could be a Santa. Oh, really? Yeah, you're good with kids, you know, because I've done a lot of work with children over the years, volunteering at schools and things like that. So lined up, and that started off, the whole show just deteriorated from there.
And so to get the gig initially, did you have to audition to be the Santa?
We applied and they accepted, basically.
Right. So no, you didn't have to sort of build wooden toys on the spot or sort of direct some reindeer around.
Yeah. No, we went for an interview. There was 12 of us at the time because we were covering the Meijer stores in Adelaide at the time. I mean, it's 2003. Yeah, I went for an interview and they said, okay, come in on this day and we'll start our training. And it just went from there.
What was the training like? What do they train you in? What's the, you know, what are the key elements of working as a good Santa?
Well, firstly, the suit, the glasses.
It's a suit.
Then they talked about the health and safety, which was most important for starters. Back when I used to be a health and safety officer, I was watching closely what they were teaching. And one of the important things was don't lift the children because you're in a sitting position. It's a terrible spot. So health and safety is quite important. The other health and safety aspect is our own health and safety. Inside this suit is hot.
Yes.
When I had, I haven't had this. So my first years were in the traditional beard.
Right, and for people listening, when Ian says this, he's gesturing towards his big, beautiful beard. That's your homegrown beard.
This is what you see is what you get.
Wow.
But under the traditional beard, because your body loses over 50% of its heat and sheds from your above your shoulders, so therefore when Santa's in his traditional beard with the hat and the suit and everything on, the only way he's got to shed heat is around his eyes. So if you haven't got a fan on, you're in a lot of trouble. And so health-wise, you have to be very healthy in yourself to be able to handle the role.
I'm a very, like, sentimental, romantic person. And I was wondering, can you describe the moment to us of, you know, children who've been lining up so excited to meet Santa and the moment they lay eyes on you? And can you just sort of describe that moment of magic for us?
Oh, boy. It's amazing. They line up and they're with mum and they're fidgeting and everything else like that. And then they come around and there's Santa on the throne. And oh, my. Some of them just step back, and quite a lot just step behind mum as if and look out from the edge and say, who dad? Who dad? And then there's the others that'll be jumping. Oh, Santa, Santa, Santa. Oh, look, it's Santa. I so want to see Santa. And they get about 3:40 and they run back to mum. I don't want to see him.
Oh, wow. And it must be some situations.
Every child is different. There is nothing that you can say is a, quote, standard child. Twins react differently. Everyone is an individual.
And they'd be really honest with you too, Santa, wouldn't they? They'd be telling you exactly what they're thinking and feeling. And that could, I'd imagine, be wonderful. But there'd be some moments also you would hear some sad stories and some tough ones as well. How do you handle those moments as a Santa?
Tough ones, yeah. See, the funny thing is Santa is such a trusted character.
Yeah.
And we have children open up about all sorts of things. But there's the ones where they put the request up. Do you think we can have mum and dad back living together? And you just, look, Santa's a toy maker and I can't help on the human things. You're the best help that there can be because you just have to love them both wherever they are, whenever you see them. And maybe they'll find ways that they can come back together or maybe not. I can't help you with that, but I can bring nice toys and gifts and things.
Oh, gosh, that's...
We have to step back because we can't fix things like that.
But that's beautifully handled. That's the way, that's the best way possible to handle that moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I can help change, should I dare say that? I can help change kids. You see, we never promise.
Yeah.
You cannot promise. We'll do our best, but we won't promise. But one year, the young fellow, he was four, and he says, I want to ride on battery-powered motorbike. Pretty specific. I said, well, that's a lovely idea. I really will try and do that. Mum said, oh, no, he's going to get one. Oh, really? Okay, that's good. That's good. Yeah, in a few weeks, he's booked for a heart-lung transplant. Oh, downer. And Santa goes down and the helper goes down. Just keep the smile on your face and you say, well, I wish you all the very best with that and I hope you like your bike too.
Yeah.
You handle it. You just put that into the background. You never, ever go out of character.
I know that you do a little bit of work with an organisation that sort of provides Santa to kids in a 24/7 capacity. Can you tell me a little bit more about that project and why it's so important?
I've been trying to do that for a good 10, probably even 15 years. I am trained as a palliative care volunteer at the local hospital, although they shifted that ward to another hospital, and so I stopped doing it. I've been a volunteer in my hospital since 2006. And at the moment, I volunteer in the emergency ward. Although, there's something going on at the moment. They won't let volunteers in there.
Yeah, of course.
Because they can't guarantee our safety. It's the old duty of care.
Santa, and can I ask you, speaking of which, in the COVID times, Santa can't do what Santa used to do, which is maybe we're starting to open it up a little bit more now because we've got some parts of Australia where there are no infections for long periods of time. But for a long time there, Santa would have to be doing Zoom calls like you're doing right now. How do you Santa remotely? How hard has that been? Or has it opened up other opportunities because you can maybe do it overseas or with people elsewhere in the world? What's the story about that?
At the moment, Santa is in a hybrid state, whereby live visits, personal visits are still going on in some shopping centres and things like that, but you are socially distant, which relies a lot of animation, trying to hear kids from 6 foot away, and lots of air hugs and elbow bumps and things like that. Santa on Zoom and virtual reaches across the world. Later today, I'll be talking to people, families in the UK and possibly a family in New Zealand. Coming this weekend, I'm one of the speakers on a panel of a global Santa conference with Santas from around the world.
Oh, wow. Now, can we just jump in there and ask you about that, the global Santa conference?
Oh, you didn't know about that.
Oh no, you've buried the lead here. You've buried the lead. There's a global Santa conference. What goes on at the global Santa conference?
It will be this Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Europe time. That's Brussels time. I'm going to be one of 5 Santas on a panel. We're trying to explain to kids that Christmas hasn't been cancelled. This is what Christmas is like in Australia.
So fantastic. You know, I didn't realize that there were so many sort of conventions and formalized structures around how to be a Santa, both in Australia and also globally. And I've seen that you're a proud signatory of the Santa Oath. What's the Santa Oath?
Other organizations have commitments, goals that they aspire to, I suppose. And a whole lot of us came back to the point of wondering what we can do to put some standards in. We like to see Santa doing a bit better than a man in a red suit, shall we say. Here's a couple. I will seek knowledge to be well-versed in the mysteries of bringing Christmas cheer and goodwill to all the people that I encounter in my journeys and travels. I shall be dedicated to hearing the secret dreams of both children and adults. I understand that the true and only gift I can give as Santa is myself.
That's wonderful. Can I ask, as a Santa, who gets to be Santa for Santa? I mean, who's giving you a present? Who's looking after Santa as he looks after the rest of the world?
There's sort of like a pyramid structure with the sort of chief ultimate Santa.
We work together as a brotherhood in red. And sisters as well. Mrs. Claus is a very important part of it. But we work together. We support each other. We've got a number of supportive groups where we can be in private and talk about our problems and our goals and get some good ideas on how to handle questions. I got some great questions answered the other night where I was one of the mothers wanted me to tell her child, if you're not good, Santa won't come to you, which, of course, is something I would never agree to. And so you redirect it to about listening to mum and about doing the things that they're asking and things like that. And so you work around it. But I would never say, oh, Santa won't come to you. Who would say that to a child? No.
So great to meet you, Santa. Wonderful to meet you. Can I just, final question, do you have a favourite Santa movie? I mean, Santa's been depicted in so many films and television series over the years. Is there one that you love that you think gets closest to the essence of being a good Santa?
There are two, and only two.
Yep.
And the first one is the original Miracle on 32nd Street.
Ah, yes.
Which is Edmund Gwynn was just... He really did the understated Santa, which is why not? It's the nice one. Santa Claus, the first movie, where he brought out the transformation from the ordinary, bumbling, average human being. Basically, you put on the suit and, if I may paraphrase from somewhere else, you don't put on another suit again because you put on the suit of Santa and you change and you become Santa to everybody that you meet.
It's magic.
Santa is very real. You won't see him, but he's very real.
And it's great to meet you, Santa Ian. Have a fantastic Christmas. I know you're very busy. Wonderful. I can hear all those bings in the background, Sally. That is all the letters arriving at the North Pole.
Oh, I wondered what that little trillalil noise was.
Oh, it's the letters are constant. It's amazing the things that are coming through.
Good on you, Santa. Happy, Merry Christmas to you.
I wish you all a wonderful Christmas. May you be with friends, whether distant or close. May you have a wonderful time sharing with other people and look forward to a brand new year. It will be a different year, but it'll be new and it'll hold such purpose, such challenges for us all. It'll be a very different year.
Thank you, Santa.
Thanks, Santa.
Santa Ian with us here on the job, enjoying a bit of Christmas cheer with one of the world's great Santas.
With Francis Leach and Sally Rugg, this is On The Job.
On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. Francis Leach and Sally Rugg with you. Sal, it's Christmas time. Have you done all your consumer spending? Have you contributed to the upkeep of the ailing Australian economy? We got buying a whole bunch of crap that nobody wants.
Do you know, it's funny that you say that because I actually feel like I have spent a little bit more money. To be honest, like probably too much money on and around Christmas this year. And the way, I don't know if you do this, like sometimes I will justify spending money to be like, it's a special occasion or like, you know, you sort of justify things to yourself.
I'm just a terrible spendthrift. I just spend on all the time recklessly.
Well, I'm a bit of a cheapskate usually, but in my mind this year, the way I'm justifying things and really unrelated things, like I'm going to go get my eyelashes done next week and, it, you know, things that are not particularly related to Christmas.
Hey, can I just ask?
Yeah.
When you say you're going to get your eyelashes done, as somebody who's never had that adventure, what does it actually mean in detail?
Well, it's quite intense. So I'll lie with my eyes sort of taped closed for 3 hours.
And that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I will often fall asleep. In fact, the last time I got it, I woke myself up with a snore. The poor person doing my lashes. And then a beauty therapist, will take every single one of my eyelashes across my top lip, every single lash, and super glue another lash or another little clump of lashes onto it.
Next question, why?
Well, it's beautiful, Francis. So it's like having false lashes for a month or so.
So it's the Bambification of
it
the
is.
Eye.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely indulgent. But this is the thing. So
I think after this year, you're allowed to do that, aren't you? You're allowed to give yourself a bit of eyelashing.
This is how I'm justifying it to myself. Like, what a, like, indulgent, exorbitant, unnecessary cost. Like, it's about $150, you know, $150 for these eyelashes.
And how long does the $150 eyelashing last?
They should last about 6 weeks, but I am a bit of an anxious picker, so I end up sort of, like, absent-mindedly picking at them. So mine usually last maybe a month.
I'm really getting to know you in all sorts of interesting ways.
But the point is that I keep justifying ridiculous expenses like that by thinking you're doing your bit for the economy. Get that spend up.
Get that eyelash industry pumping again.
And it is true that, you know, this particular woman I see, like, she wouldn't have had clients all year. So I am doing my bit.
What gift do you least like to receive? Let's be honest here. What's the thing that you go, really? You didn't put much thought into that.
Oh. Well, I'm just trying to
think. Someone gives you socks, for instance, you kind of go, yeah, that took you about 30 seconds.
It's more, I really like handmade gifts. Yeah, like something handmade or a nice written card. Like that's, to me, it's sort of like the thought and effort that's more important. Really, really expensive gifts. I mean, this is going to fly completely counter to what I just said about $150 eyelashes. But really expensive gifts often make me feel a bit uncomfortable because, I don't know, maybe there's some sort of like self-worth stuff. I don't know. I pay my therapist to talk about this. But, yeah, I think really expensive gifts I don't always love. What about you? What do you not like to receive?
Socks and probably a mug, a coffee mug.
Oh.
Got 100 of those things.
Okay.
One that says world's greatest dad or something like that. I mean, you know.
Okay, humble brag.
Don't give me one of those.
I really hate all the coffee mugs that I own that says world's super greatest. Handsome man. So funny.
Don't give anyone any exercise equipment either. Never do that.
Okay.
Because that just says you think they're unfit and maybe out of shape.
Oh, my partner Kate is really into weightlifting and, I mean, she won't listen to this podcast before Christmas. Well, I won't let her, but I've bought her some new weightlifting gloves because she's getting calluses on her hand from lifting the barbells. Maybe she likes them, but I'm just going to
assume. Did she get an eyelashing as well?
She did. She actually got her eyelashes done yesterday.
Oh, there you go. Beautiful. Have a great Christmas, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be back next week before the new year with the next edition of On The Job, the podcast all about making your working life better. Hey, don't forget you can check us out on the social. Sally is at on Twitter at Sally_Rugg. Did I get that right?
Yeah, no underscores. No just underscores. Sally Rugg. On Instagram, there's a couple of underscores in the mix, but I don't quite remember how it goes.
You'll find.
Yeah.
And I'm at St. Frankly. As you spell it, on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. And also give us a rating on iTunes because we need to feel the love. So if you give us a 5-star rating, we might jump up the charts and more people might find us.
Yeah, 5 stars good, 4 stars also good. Don't worry about any other rating. Don't bother with that. Please subscribe. Please send this link to your mates who might enjoy it.
And might need their eyelashes done. And if you're interested in all these issues, you can go to australianunions.org.au for more information. Have a great Christmas and we'll see you on the other side. Bye
Merry
for now.
Christmas. On the job. job.